2 Kings chapter 5. You'll notice when you get there that there's a very familiar story in 2 Kings 5. The story of Naaman the leper. We're not going to be looking at that story as a whole tonight. We're going to be looking at one of the minor characters in the story. This story is a familiar one. We talk about Naaman and his arrogance, his pride, his unwillingness to do what Elisha had told him to do in order to find the cleansing of his leprosy. But there's a character in the story that's often forgotten because so little is said about this person. In fact, her portion of the story only comprises 2 verses. Look with me at 2 Kings chapter 5. Let's read beginning at verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. Now the Arameans had gone out in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Aram said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." He departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. Naaman will then take this letter from the king of Aram, or Syria, it's the same nation, and he will take it to the king of Israel, who will mock and scoff when that letter is brought to him, because he says, "There is nothing that I can do about this. I can't cure you of your leprosy. I have no power to do this." But the prophet Elisha knows about these goings-on, and he says, "Naaman, come over here." He sends for Naaman to come, and when Naaman comes to the house of Elisha, Naaman has some expectations about what Elisha is going to do. He thinks Elisha is going to come out and, you know, kind of like David Copperfield, he's going to perform some magic trick and he's going to wave his hands over his face or whatever, and Naaman is going to be cured. But much to Naaman's surprise, Elisha doesn't even come outside. He sends out a servant to Naaman and says, "Go wash in the Jordan River 7 times and your skin will be clean." Well, Naaman is furious about this. "He didn't even come out to speak to me." And not only that, the Jordan River? The waters of Damascus are so much better than the Jordan River. Why couldn't he send me to one of those? Well, Naaman was fortunate that he had some good people in his corner. And he had some servants who talked some sense into him. And they said, "Sir, if Elisha had told you to do something incredible, wouldn't you have done it? But he's told you to do something so simple, and you won't do it." And they talk some sense into Naaman, and so he decides ultimately to go to the Jordan River. He washes 7 times. His leprosy is cured. We know the story. But have we looked over the little girl that we read about in those first 5 verses? Have we forgotten about her? I think I have for many years. I think many of us have forgotten about this little girl in this story. Her portion of the story, as I said, only comprises 2 verses. Verses 2 and 3. She's referred to in verse 4, but as far as her activities, verses 2 and 3. And yet I think this girl provides us with some very valuable lessons in just these 2 little verses. And so I want to talk with you tonight about a captain and a servant girl. And I want to talk about some lessons that we learned from this servant girl. First of all, I want us to see her situation. Look again at verse 2. Now the Arameans had gone out in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. The Syrian armies, who were led by Naaman the leper, have gone out raiding among the different regions of Israel. And they bring this little girl captive, and Naaman makes her a servant of his wife. Now think about her situation. How old is this little girl? Well, we don't know. The text just calls her a little girl, so we take it from that she's probably not 30. She's little, she's young, she's small. She's obviously old enough to be capable of serving. So whatever age she might be, at least we have an idea. But this is a very young child. But she is taken away from her family, from her friends, and from her homeland. She is ripped out of a very comfortable environment, the environment that she was growing up in. Her freedom and her future are taken away from her. For all she knows, she's going to be a servant for the rest of her life, at least as long as the Arameans are in power. And to top it all off, she becomes the servant of the wife of the man responsible for her being taken captive. This was an unfair situation for her. And we read this story and we think about the situation that she's in and we can't help but feel for her. We say, wow, this is not right. This is not fair. And we are bothered by the unfairness of life sometimes. We see things that happen in the world and we are bothered by the injustice and the oppression that we see. But when children are the ones who are suffering, we feel that even more. We hate to see children being mistreated in any way. That affects us in a different way than if we see adults being mistreated. Adults being mistreated is bad enough, but when you hurt the children, it just means something more to us. I don't want to make light of this at all, but let me give you an illustration. Sometimes you see on television commercials for third world impoverished nations. And there are organizations, humanitarian groups that are putting these commercials on TV and they're showing you pictures of people who are starving, people who are malnourished, who have to drink dirty water every day, people who have no shoes, they have no money to provide other changes of clothes than what they wear, the one change of clothes that they have from day to day. You see those commercials and you know the ones I'm talking about. How often do you see adults in those commercials? Oh, you typically see children in those commercials, don't you? You see little children suffering. You see little children drinking that poor water. You see little children who are undernourished and starving and some of them dying from diseases because of the sanitation standards in those countries. You see the children. Why do they put children on those commercials? Because that affects us in a different way. Not that we are excited and happy about seeing starving adults. Of course not. But when you see the children, it just affects us in a much deeper way. We see the oppression that this girl is experiencing, and we can't help but feel for her. It reminds me of this passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Turn in your Bibles there to what Solomon says about what he saw while he was living. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 1. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 1. Then I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun. And behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. And he goes on to say, I congratulated the dead rather than those who are living because they've moved on from these terrible things. Better yet still is the one who's not going to be born because they never have to experience these things or see these things. But Solomon's words are true, and they're true in the case of this little servant girl. She was oppressed by a nation that at the time was more powerful than her own. And she is in an unfair situation that I think we can look at and we can appreciate. But after we think about her situation, the second thing I want us to see is her disposition. Look at verse 3 of 2 Kings chapter 5. Verse 3 of 2 Kings 5. She said to her mistress, so she says to Naaman's wife, I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would heal him of his leprosy. She has a happy disposition. I wish that my master could see Elisha. I wish. That's happiness. Her disposition is positive. She's not walking around sulking or wallowing in self-pity. Perhaps she did that for a time. I'm sure that when she was taken from her home, she was scared. She was frightened and fearful. But she wasn't anymore. She is in a time of personal crisis and she's happy. I just wish. I would to God, is literally what she said. I would to God that my master could meet Elisha. She didn't let her unfair circumstances affect her attitude. And I think this is important. I was listening to a podcast last week. And this was a podcast, actually, it was a financial podcast. It was about money and personal finance and some things like that. But the person was talking about financial disasters and when bad things happen in our lives and things that cost a lot of money happen in our lives and how we respond to those and how we handle those. And the person said something that I thought was interesting, and it was applicable to more than just finance. Here's what this person said. Quote, "Events in life either make us bitter or better. The difference is just a single letter." I thought about that for a moment. Things that happen in our lives make us bitter or they make us better. And it all depends on how we respond to those things. Bad things are going to happen to us. We can count on that. At some point in our lives, something tragic is going to happen to us personally or to those we love. And the New Testament teaches us how to respond to these things. I want to go to the book of James. Look at James chapter 1 with me. James chapter 1. And when you read this passage in James 1, I want you to think about this little servant girl from 2 Kings chapter 5. James 1 and verse 2. "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance," or patience. Doesn't that describe the little girl from 2 Kings 5? She considered it joy to be in the circumstances that she was in. "I wish my master could see Elijah or Elisha." She responds joyfully. She's happy despite these terrible circumstances that she is in. Now here's the second thing I want us to see. And that is that she didn't lose her faith in God. She knew about Elisha. She knew about the miracles that he had performed in the past. And she believed in Elisha. She believed in God's power being manifested in Elisha. And so she calls attention to Elisha and she wants her master to know about him. She still believes in the power that Elisha has. We can't lose our faith when bad things happen in our lives. And so many people have done that. So many Christians' faith will waver and it will go into a period of darkness or a period of superficiality when something bad comes into their life and they turn around and say, "Where is God? God has left me. God has abandoned me." I'll tell you, we need to remember the words that Job said to his wife. Remember when Job's wife came to him after he had lost so much? After now he personally was being affected by Satan's trials. His wife came to him and she said, "You need to curse God and die." And he said to her, "Shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity?" Are we only going to love God and serve God when things are going well? We need to accept that bad things come as well. And we can't lose our faith. Solomon, again, in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 14, said, "In the day of prosperity, be happy, but in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other." When things are going well, be happy, be joyful, be thankful. But when things go bad, you consider. God has appointed one as well as the other. And we don't need to lose our faith in Him when bad things happen in our lives. This little girl didn't do that. She knew about Elisha's power. She knew where that power came from, and she trusted that Elisha was still a man who had the power of God. Now, here's another thing that we see from her disposition in these circumstances, and that is she sought the well-being of her enemy. She doesn't resent Naaman or his wife for what they have done. She doesn't seem bitter. She doesn't resent them. She seeks their good. She seeks Naaman's good. She sees her master Naaman suffering day after day after day. And I think many of us, if we were in that circumstance, we would have looked at him and we would have said, "Ha, serves you right. This is what you get. You rip me from my homeland. You take me away from my family. I'm glad you're suffering the way you are. And I hope this disease kills you." I think that's how many of us would have acted. But she doesn't do that. "I wish my master knew about Elisha. He could cure him." She has her own problems. But she saw Naaman's problems as more important. And she seeks the well-being of her enemy. Several passages I want to look at with you. Jeremiah chapter 29 is the first one I want to look at. Jeremiah 29. Jeremiah 29 is a letter that Jeremiah writes to the captives of Judah who are in Babylon. And Jeremiah has been telling them that their captivity is not going to be a short one. It's going to last for 70 years, he said. And so he tells them, you need to be prepared to stay for a long time. In fact, in verse 5, he says, "Build houses, live in them, plant gardens, eat their produce, take wives, become the fathers of sons and daughters, take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands that they may bear sons." You're going to have grandchildren in this place. You're going to be there so long, he says. Now look at verse 7. "Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will have welfare." You see what Jeremiah says there? You captives from Judah who have been ripped from your homeland, you captives who saw the Babylonians come into Jerusalem and wipe out the city and take you off into captivity, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pray for Babylon. Do what? You seek the welfare of the city of Babylon, because when the city is successful, when the city is prosperous, you who live there will be prosperous too. Jeremiah says, seek the good of your enemy and not their ill. Look at Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4, same context of time, God's people in the Babylonian captivity. And in Daniel chapter 4, King Nebuchadnezzar, the very king responsible for the Babylonian captivity, he has a dream, and Daniel is called in to explain this dream to him, and he understands what the dream is all about. And in chapter 4 and verse 19, "Then Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, was appalled for a while as his thoughts alarmed him. The king responded and said, 'Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation alarm you.' Belteshazzar," or Daniel, "replied, 'My lord, if only the dream applied to those who hate you and its interpretation to your adversaries.'" What he is saying there is, Nebuchadnezzar, this dream is not good. The consequences of what you saw are not good. You're going to be punished. The kingdom temporarily is going to be taken away from you. And I wish that this applied to your enemies. Well, I thought Nebuchadnezzar was Daniel's enemy. Seek the welfare of the city. That's exactly what Daniel's doing. He is seeking the good of King Nebuchadnezzar. He's seeking the good of his enemy. And finally, you probably thought of this passage already. How about Matthew chapter 5? Matthew chapter 5. Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 verse 43, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." Jesus says, don't hate your enemies. Love your enemies. And when people mistreat you, I want you to pray for them. And if we go back to our previous point about being joyful in times of trial, Jesus would say, when people are mean to you and when people mistreat you, you accept it joyfully and you be thankful for those opportunities. This little girl, despite her circumstances, she's happy. This little girl, despite her circumstances, does not lose faith in God. And this little girl, despite her circumstances, she seeks the well-being of the enemy who has virtually ruined her life. Well, finally, let's talk about her action. Go back to 2 Kings 5. Look at verse 3 again. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy." And at her compulsion, Naaman's wife goes to him, tells him what she said. Naaman goes to his king, tells him what the little girl said. And on the story goes. I want to point out a couple of things about her action, her willingness to speak. Number one, despite her obscurity, she saw and she took an opportunity. In her obscurity, she took an opportunity. You know, there are great differences between this little girl and Naaman. She is an Israelite, he is a Syrian. She is a little girl. In verse 1, he is called a great man. She is a captive. He is a mighty commander. She's a lowly servant. But he is highly regarded by his king. There are many contrasts between these two. And she probably, at least at one time, felt that she was in no position to say anything to him. And yet over time, she was not afraid to speak. She was not afraid to offer help. She had information that could help him. And she was willing to give that to him despite her lowly position. You know, sometimes great things come from unlikely places. Haven't you found that to be true? Great things come from unlikely places. In this case, the unlikely place was this little servant girl. But go with me to John chapter 6. John chapter 6. Here's another great thing that came from an unlikely place. In John 6, this is one of the miracles that Jesus performed, the feeding of the 5,000. And this is a miracle that's recorded in all four of the gospel accounts. If you're looking for five gospel accounts, you're going to be looking for a long time. This one is in all four of them. Jesus feeds these 5,000 people. But you remember, Jesus said to his disciples, "I want you to feed all these people." And his disciples look up on the hillside and they see all these thousands of people and they say, "How are we going to do that? We don't have enough money to feed all these people. How are we going to do this?" Well, in John 6, in verse 8, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has five barley loaves and two fish. But what are these for so many people?" What are these for so many people? There's a little boy here who's got some bread and he's got a couple of fish. This little boy is carrying around his lunch pail that his mom packed for him that morning. And Jesus calls that little boy over to him. Andrew brings him. Jesus calls him to himself and he takes that boy's bread and he multiplies it again and again and again and he feeds a multitude. You parents with young children, and I'm speaking to myself in this, even young children can be servants of Christ. This little boy was a servant of Jesus by bringing his lunch to him and saying, "Do what you can with this." Even our young children can be servants of Jesus. We don't need to tell our children that they've got to wait until they're older before they can be useful in God's service. This little girl in 2 Kings 5 was useful, even though she's just a little girl. She's just a little Israelite girl. She's just a little Israelite girl with no power, with no influence, with nothing. And yet, in spite of her obscurity, she took an opportunity. And she did great things. Here's the second thing. Even in her bad circumstances, she was able to proclaim good news. She used a bad situation to create a good opportunity. And she spoke when many, perhaps most, would have kept silent. You know, oftentimes we lament the evil days in which we live. We talk about all the bad and all the evil that's in the world. We talk about all the terrible people that are in the world. But let's not lose sight of the opportunities that that places before us. We can proclaim good news of great things in Jesus Christ while this world continues to move away from God. The farther away from God people go, that just means they need Jesus more and more. And we have Him. We have the answer. We have the message. We have the ability to proclaim that good news. And the Apostle Paul, when he wrote the book of Philippians, in Philippians chapter 2, he said as much to the church in Philippi. He said, "Prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world." Paul said, the world around you is crooked, it is perverse, and it is dark. But you reflect the light of Christ. You show that you are children of God by shining your light, by speaking good things, by proclaiming good news, even in bad circumstances. And that's what this little girl did. She spoke. She spoke in her obscurity, and she spoke in her bad circumstances. There are some very powerful lessons that we learn from this little girl whose story only takes two verses. So much to learn. And I appreciate this little girl. I appreciate her more now than I ever did. And I hope that you do too. You may be thinking that, what can I do? I'm just one person in a large world that is filled with billions of people. What can I do? Well, I'm going to tell you, you can do great things. You can do a lot of things. And this little girl teaches us that. So thank you for your attention tonight. Maybe someone here tonight who is not a child of God. Leave the darkness. Find the light of Jesus Christ. Maybe you've glimpsed that light. Maybe you've glimpsed it through the study of God's Word. You've been reading, you've been thinking about the Scriptures. Maybe you've glimpsed it even here tonight as we've been worshiping God together. Maybe you've glimpsed it in the life of someone that you know is a Christian. And through their good, godly influence, you have recognized your need to become a Christian. We want to help you tonight if you need to obey the gospel. Would you please come as we stand and sing together?